Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Cosmos Magazine, Summer 2018. Just reading through it. So this is episode 1. Editor's note by Elizabeth Finkel. Science and art sit at opposite ends of the spectrum of human inquiry. Science is objective, collaborative, and continually changing as theories are supported or refuted by evidence. It relies on a competitive culture to tear down faulty logic and dodgy data. Art is objective. It is an expression of individuals' innermost space and relies on sympathetic culture for the artist's work to engage and resonate with an audience. Yet there are commonalities. Both are engaged in the exploration of our world, and they have always crossed paths. Science has traditionally turned to artwork to bring its new findings to life. Take Santiago Ramin y Cali, a Spanish pathologist who won the Nobel Prize in 1906. He turned to art to overturn prevailing views on brain science. His exquisite ink sketches show the brain circuitry was not a series of connected wires as thought at the time. Rather, they were mysterious gaps, synapses between the ends of the wires. Ernest Haeckel, another artist, scientist of the 19th century, champions Darwin's idea in a very beautiful drawings of plants and animals. In the 20th century, biologists James Watson and Francis Crick were sure DNA must carry the code of life, but how? Only by building a model were they able to see. Likewise, scientists trying to understand the operations of nanomachines we know as proteins rely on images drawn by X-rays. It's true about nanomachines are built by proteins. Okay, paleontologists rely on artists to put flesh on their dry bones and the theories. Botanical artists are called in to illustrate clearly the fine features of differentiated a new species. For scientists, a picture is not just worth 1,000 words, it can be worth 1,000 data points. Oh dear. NASA has always getting artists to represent its data. Astronomers' computer screens show squiggles on a graph. Artists get into the minds of astronomers to show what they really see. Take a look at the artwork throughout this issue and treat yourself to the animations online showing collision of a pair of neutron stars detected in the first time in 2017. The art makes it real. Art inspires science. Just science inspires artists. In this issue, we exhibit works by artists from whom science is the muse. Their work is arranged from confronting to the sublime. Patricia Puccini, for example, compels us to examine how scientific advances are shifting moral lines in the sand. Xavier Cardenas' triumphal banners pay homage to nothing less than the discovery of the God particle. Art and science also cross paths in a bizarre way in the profile of humanoid robotics engineering Hiroshi Ishiguro. Compare his story to Puccini, artists and roboticists who are both exploring the boundaries of what makes us human. The Cosmos team has been enthralled and captured exploring the space between art and science. We think you will be too. Digest in Cosmos Magazine, and the digest areas in archaeologists, the bubbles tell the tale. The Portland vase dated to the first century is on display in the British Museum has long been considered the finest surviving example of an emerging Roman glass blowing research. Now this is different because we're told that art is discovered by the Phoenicians at the start of the Renaissance. Research led by Richard Wiley of the Australian National University of Canberra, however, reveals that the vase has been wrongly catalogued for centuries. It's actually made of an older method. By making virtual slices through the vase using computer tomography scans, we found that only tiny trapped bubbles in the glass. Quote, you just would not get a bubble the size of that shape, flat shape from blowing, he says. Bubbles are instead indicative of a process now known as plate de verre, still popular technique in the first century Rome, where a paste or powdered glass was pressed into a mould and then fired. Okay. This is 2017's biggest story. So this is the story. And it's interesting. The summer for us is, or for everyone, what that means. Okay. This is in the area of Digest called Space 2017. There's no authors for this. 2017's biggest story, why the world's astronomers are excited at colliding neutron stars. I can't think of a similar situation in the field of science in my lifetime where a single event provides so many staggering insights about our universe. Quote. Astronomer Daniel Holtz of the University of Chicago is referring to the collision that took place 130 million years away between two neutron stars. It was detected on the 17th of August 2017, marking the first time scientists have ever witnessed such a cataclysm. They could do so because the gravitational wave detectors of the US-based Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory LIGO and the Virgo detector in Italy alerted them to the event. The astronomers would then point the telescopes to watch. Together, the observations confirmed long-standing theories about how such an event would unfold. Papers about the findings have been published in the Physical Review Letters, Science and Nature, and finally compending submitted to the Astrophysical Journal Letters has a staggering 3,500 authors, close to a third of the world's astronomers. The first gravitational wave ever detected by LIGO in September 2015, was broadcast by a pair of colliding black holes. Detecting the cosmos cataclysm was a technological tour de force that won the Nobel Prize at 2017. It was rather a hard act to follow. A collision of two neutron stars, super-dense collapsed corpses of exploded stars, seem a little dull in comparison, but physicists are every bit as excited. With the colliding black holes, there was nothing to see. The gravitational pull meant no light could escape. By contrast, the neutron stars collision, dubbed GW170817, allowed the astronomers to watch. LIGO's two detectors and Virgo registered the light pitch signal from the gravitational waves. By triangulation, the three well-spaced observations were able for the astronomers to narrow their search. 2 seconds after the chirp from the gravitational wave, NASA's Fermi Space Telescope detected gamma ray bursts coming from a small region in the Hydra constellation, located in the southern hemisphere, 130 million light years away. More than 70 observers scattered across the globe gave astronomers their first ever sight of a killer nova, a light relating to the halo of material ejected from the coalesced stars. Columbia's University Brian Metzinger had predicted such an object in 2010 and coined the name killer nova, expecting it would be as bright as a thousand supernova. Over the next few days, the killer nova radiated light waves across the spectrum from X-ray to the blue and infrared. The gamma ray burst was an immediate result of the collision. The subsequent killer nova light was released by a shroud of material ejected during and after. Neutrons combined with surrounding elements to create heavy elements. From their spectral signatures, we now learn that the heaviest elements are created in such a cataclysm, solving a 60-year-old mystery since E. Margaret Burrich and Fred Hoyle and colleagues showed that elements heavier than iron were too unstable to form within stars. The granddaddy finding of them all was the near simultaneous arrival of the gravitational church and the gravitational gamma ray, just 2 seconds apart. That confirms Einstein's 100-year-old prediction that gravitational waves would travel at the speed of light. Astronomers are gobsmacked that so many long-standing predictions have been confirmed in the blink of an eye. Quote, "We didn't expect to see this so soon," says Eric Hale of the University of Western Australia. Space again. ET search finds nothing. The hunt for alien microwaves finds only silence. As far as science of intelligent life goes, it's as quiet as a grave from here to 50 past 6, 1.55 billion kilometres in every direction. That's a preliminary summary from the first year of the Breakthrough Listen Initiative, BLI, the program of 10-year mission to seek out signals from extraterrestrials. BLI project ultimately aims to monitor microwaves emitted near 1 million stars. The first year results of data of just 692 collected by the Green Bank Telescope, GPT, in West Virginia. So they're hardly conclusive. Neither, however, are they encouraging. With significant private support, including $10 million from a Russian oligarch, Yulia Miller, and his wife, BLI has paid to see to use two large radio telescopes in the GPT and Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia, and the Automated Planet Finder Optical Telescope at Lick Observatory in California, to cover a vastly more sky than previous searches for extraterrestrial intelligence. Researchers led by astronomer Emilio Emits of the University of California, Berkeley, the home of Breakthrough Science, Listen Science Program, analyzed the data from the GP looking specifically for transmission within the microwave window, which is between 1 and 10 gigahertz. Now, there is that spin of 21 centimeters from hydrogen hyperfine splitting. In the search strategy suggested in 1959, astronomer Philip Morrison and Giuseppe Cassini, they recognized the microwave window is the Goldilocks zone for interstellar telecommunication. Low frequencies will experience interference when passing through galaxies emitting low frequency radio waves. High frequencies tend to get absorbed by Earth-like planetary atmospheres. Signals from space within a microwave window are thus automatically of interest to ET hunters, even more so if they display significant variation and indication of possibly encoded data. The search has focused on the lower end of the microwave window, looking at signals between 1.1 and 1.9 GHz. The rest of the range is covered over the next few years. The early results had been promising, with 11 signals deemed interesting enough for further analysis, but all of them turned out to have originated on Earth. In effect, the telescopes were picking up our own background babble. In their paper published on preprint server Eve, hosted by Cornwall University Library, the researchers report, quote, none of the observed systems host high-duty cycle radio transmitters emitting between 1.1 and 1.9 gigahertz. But a modicum of hope is left. There is still a chance to transmit within 50 parsecs of Earth, though the estimated probability is less than 0.1%. Again, next article on space. The universe's underlying symmetry still baffling. Magnetic differences between matter and antimatter do not explain why the universe actually exists. One of the great mysteries in modern physics is why antimatter, particles with reverse electric charge that destroy normal matter on contact, did not annihilate the universe at the beginning of time. To explain it, physicists suppose there must have been some minuscule distance or asymmetry between the ordering particles and their mirror images. Whatever the difference is, it seems it is not their magnetism. Physicists in CERN, Switzerland, made the most precise measurement yet of the anti-proton's magnetic moment. So, magnetic moment is interesting. See you, Quaff. How the particle responds to a magnetic force is found perfectly, perfectly symmetrical with the proton. In a later series of extremely precise measurements of antimatter properties, including mass and electric charge, the two differences, that's what I remember. That's Stern Galactic's silver ions, which are separated out. I'll have to do it. I was really struggling to remember this experiment, the Stern Galactic experiment, where they measured this spin and the effect of magnetic field by having magnetic things going through an asymmetric magnetic field. So far none has been found. Quote, all our observations find complete symmetry between matter and antimatter, which is why the universe should not actually exist, jokes Christian Samora, physicist for CERN's baryon-antibaryon symmetry experiments base collaboration. Quote, an asymmetry must exist somewhere, but we simply do not understand where the difference is, quote. Well, isn't there a parity variation by kaon, neutral kaon decay? I think that was it. Matter is notoriously unstable. It's not unstable. Any contact with regular matter and it annihilates in a burst of pure energy that is the most efficient reaction known to physics. That's why it is chosen to power the fuels of the starship Enterprise in Star Trek, and it is in pit radiation. The standard model of particle physics predicts the Higgs bands should have produced equal amounts of matter and antimatter, but that's combustive mixture that would have annihilated itself, leaving nothing behind to make galaxies, planets, or people. To explain the mystery, physicists have been long searching for some discrepancy. To explain the matter came to dominate. The anti-proton measurements Stefan and Bass team had been a decade in the making. First, they had to develop a way of directly measuring the meeting moment of a regular proton, itself a groundbreaking achievement reported in Nature 2014. Making the measurement on antiprotons a double difference, since antimatter would destroy any physical container, physicists used magnetic and electric fields to contain material in devices called panning traps. Usually, antimatter's longevity is limited to the trap's imperfections that allow us to leak. By using a combination of two traps, the Bass team made the most perfect antimatter chamber ever, holding the antiprotons for 405 days, enabling measurement of their magnetic moment. The result is the moment of a neutron. Mu n is a constant called the nuclear magnetron. This is identical apart from the minus signs to the proton measurement. Their finding, published in Nature, is 350 times more precise than any previous attempt, equivalent to measuring the Earth's circumference to within a few centimetres. The universe's greatest gram of what the difference thus goes on. The next hotly anticipated experiment is over at Alpha, where CERN scientists, that's the name for it, but it's not explained what it is, where CERN scientists are studying gravitation's effect on antimatter and whether it might fall up. Well, that would be actually very interesting. Now, that is actually quite an interesting thing, whether antimatter falls up. Biology. We're 17 minutes in. The modern glass skeletons point to better electronics. Ancient organisms may hold the way to design tomorrow's devices. Modern electronics may take a lesson from some of the oldest organisms on the planet. Following the discovery of a new sea-dwelling glass, sponges developed their characteristic crystal-like spikes. Sponges fabricate precisely shaped nanocrystals using techniques that could be prove handy in making devices including solar cells and sensors. The secret lies in the way the sponges use proteins, according to the research of Igor Zolintkov and Vanessa Schopler of the Technical University of Dresden in Germany and published in the Journal of Scientific Advances. The scientists studied three species that use complex glass structures known as spiracles in their skeletons for internal support and strengthen their protection. Inside each spiracle is a tiny filament containing a protein called a silicaretin that, together with some derivative proteins, catalyzes the reposition of silicon. The spatial structure of the protein molecules researchers found helps determine the final shape of the spiracle. Using electron microscopes and X-ray diffraction to examine the spiracles, researchers found that the proteins in the filaments packed into a regular hexagonal crystalline structure. This was true for all three sponges, despite the fact they produced spiracles of different shapes. While T. Arinthum reduces straight needle-like spiracles, those of S. podocus exhibit precise three-way branching, and G. sodium grows spiky orbs that mature into a rough spheres. How do the different structures arise? This is due to tiny variations in the hexagonal spacing of the reagent proteins. Crescent protein filaments acts as a template for depositions of silica into the spiracles. Very small difference in distance and angle can translate into large-scale changes in branching of the symmetry. When it comes to manufacturing new glass geometries, researchers note we have plenty of to learn from the abilities of these humble glass sponges, which are, quote, far from the reach of current human technology. Chernobyl's blast was nuclear after all. Isotope analysis concludes the plant's first disaster explosion was not steam. Oh, this is really interesting. The explosion of a Chernobyl reactor plant in April 86 remains the most catastrophic nuclear accident in history. To contain radiation, its ruptured number 4 reactor was encased in thick concrete. Today, the facility is 130 kilometres north of Kiev in the Ukraine, is still a no-go zone at the centre of a 2,600 square kilometre. So, that's like 50 by 50 kilometre exclusion zone. Past investigations into the failure of Chernobyl number 4 reactor concluded the event was caused by a steam explosion, explanation supporting the case often put forward by the nuclear power proponents that at least there has never been a nuclear explosion in a nuclear reactor. The standard narrative has now been contradicted by researchers from the Swedish Defence Research Agency, the Swedish Meteorology and Hydrological Institute and Stockholm University. Chernobyl number 4 reactor was destroyed by a nuclear explosion of a steam one, they report research published in the Journal of Nuclear Technology. Based on analysing the distribution and composition of xenon isotopes, like at xenon 123, so 125 is the one which is a neutron poison, which it meant that they got tricked by. In the days after the catastrophe, the team led by Lars-Erik de Geer concluded the first two explosions reported by eyewitnesses were in fact nuclear ones, followed seconds later by a secondary steam explosion. The nuclear explosion sent a jet of debris very high into the sky. The steam explosion ruptured the reactor and sent still more debris into the atmosphere, but at lower altitudes. The Swedish team also looked at the physical evidence to support the case. Analyzing damage to the reactor after the explosion, they noted the first blast had generated temperatures hot enough to melt through 2 meters thick plate beneath the core, an outcome comparable with a nuclear blast. The steam explosion, I calculate, could not have had that sufficient energy. Quote, we believe that the thermal neutron immediate reactor explosion at the bottom of the number of fuel channels the reactor caused the jet of debris to shoot upwards through the refueling tubes, degree of stairs. Quote, the steam explosion which ruptured the reactor vessel occurred some 2.7 seconds later. It's a very short blink of the eye. Okay, 23 minutes in. Let's see if we can go. Biology. Goebbels count the beat unconsciously. Beat perception may not just be a high-level brain function as thought. Anesthetized Goebbels can still dig a block-rocking beat, but would be left cold by Bob Marley's reggae. That is a broad finding of research that suggests while conscious beat perception is extremely rare in the animal kingdom, it may exist as an unconscious level in mammals. Only a few species apart from humans have ability to keep the beat. The select list includes cockatoos, bonobos and sea lions. In humans, the ability to respond to beats has long been attributed to a complex process involving human brain sophisticated at a layer, the cortex coordinating its sensory and motor inputs. However, in the finally published in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B, Vanis Rajendran and colleagues at the University of Oxford show that before the system engaged, the more primitive midbrain, which relays the input to the cortex, may already be shaping the response. To make their finding, the team anaesthetized several Goebbels and recorded the activity of the inferior colpheus, a major midbrain relay route that funnels information to the auditory nerves and cerebral cortex. The unconscious rodents were exposed to seven rhythmic patterns. As a control, the same patterns were played to human subjects who remained conscious and were asked to tap along. Scientists report that girls reacted most strongly to rhythms that were on beat. That is, a 4-4 system, and the emphasis on the first and third beat of the bar. Typical of much rock music, they reacted less strongly to rhythms on the offbeat, a kind of second or fourth beat emphasis that defines reggae. Okay, that's interesting. The team suggests the results indicate that humans perceive music may not wholly be cultural matter and constrained by more primitive brain processes. Oysters. I'm going for half hour here. I'll see if I can get him. Oysters can detect deep notes. Researchers established mollusks react to sounds with implications for the food supply. If you care about the welfare of oysters, never take one to a heavy metal concert. That's a strong implication of research published by the Journal of PLOS One. A team led by Jean-Charles Masbar of the University of Bordeaux in France decided to investigate whether oysters have a sense of hearing. This might seem strange interest, but it seems mollusks have left behind when it comes to research on hearing abilities of sea creatures. Maswell and his team decided to remedy that, and for good reason, the oysters farms are a significant global industry. Mollusks also play a key role in marine ecosystems. So the question of whether they are being affected by increasing levels of human-made underwater noise pollution is important. To find out how sensitive oysters are to sound, scientists set up two groups of mollusks in tanks fitted with speakers, which broadcast a range of signal frequency notes at various volumes for 3 minutes at a time. The effect on oysters was measured by whether and to what extent they closed their shells when the sounds were played. The team found that animals were particularly sensitive to low frequency notes, especially 10 to 200 hertz, but did not react to higher frequency ones. In other words, oysters would clam to Black Sabbath concert, where the decay and kick drum would push out between 20 and 100 hertz, but it would be unperturbed by Frank Liszt's Liebestraum for solo harp. The researchers suggest deep notes might generate from the interaction of waves and rocks to trigger opening and closing behaviour in oysters as tides rise and fall. Unfortunately, they also include sounds emitted by cargo ships, underwater pile driving and wind turbines, raising the possibility that man-made noise may disturb the natural life cycle of oysters and ultimately our diets. Technology. Again on song. Deep Purple song, now one for the ages. A famous rock song has successfully been stored in DNA. The 2013 recording of rock band Deep Purple performing the iconic song Smoke in the Water at the Montreux Jazz Festival became a part of the first audiovisual archive in UNESCO's Memory of the World Register. Now the recording has made history again. It is one of the first items on the Memory of the World archives to be stored in the form of DNA and then played back with 100% accuracy. The project was a joint effort between the University of Washington, Microsoft, and Twist Bioscience, a San Francisco-based DNA manufacturing company. The pundits predict that it's just a matter of time till DNA pips magnetic tapes as the ultimate way to store data. DNA is compact, efficient, and resilient. After all, it has been tweaked for over a billion years into a perfect repository for genetic information. Oh, I just find mutations and fixed all the time. We'll never become obsolete because as long as there's life on Earth, we'll be interested in decoding DNA. So long as scientists turn a song into a molecule in the first place, first, digital music was translated into the form of a series of ones and noughts, the DNA alphabet, RAC, TG, for example, 00 and 01, and 10, let's say, double binding, and double one for G. Then the sequences of the letters were assembled into short DNA phrases, with indexing information added to keep them in the right order. Using their coding sequences, the DNA was manufactured letter by letter and then chemical reactions and stored in a test tube. To retrieve the information of the DNA, was run through a sequencing machine to read the exact order of DNA bases. It was then decoded to produce the original binary data. Finally, it was played to an audience of hyper-picky Deep Purple fans who were unable to pick the errors.
Thank you for listening. It's half an hour up to page 15, so hopefully I'll be able to read this magazine in fewer chunks. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.